Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. You may be noticing that we're in a different set today, and that's because we're in the Mahanakhon King Power Tower of Bangkok, Thailand. It's the tallest tower in all of Thailand, actually, and up there for all of Southeast Asia. It houses one of the most iconic hotels, in my opinion, in Thailand, in Bangkok. It's called The Standard. The Standard is a brand all the way from New York, but it's gone global over the past 20 years. And its flagship of Asia Pacific is here in Bangkok. We're here to meet the Standard International Managing Director, Phong. Phong is a recent colleague that I've met through the hospitality and media world. He now runs the Standard Asia team specifically, but also oversees the international division. Phong, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome to the Standard Bangkok
Mahanakhon. Yeah, it's fabulous here. I absolutely love staying here.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys, before we get into today's podcast, we're going to start with some rapid-fire questions for Phong here to get things a bit warmed up. Phong, you ready?
Let's go.
All right. What excites you about Thailand and Asia?
I think people really get culture. Yeah.
What are the standards that you're setting at Standard Asia?
New things. You know, new way of looking at traditional travel, traditional luxury.
I'm looking at hotel options in Bangkok. Why the Standard?
I think, you know, all the table stakes we have, but if you want to look for experiences, different kind of experiences, different culinary offering, think of the Standard.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned managing a hospitality brand?
I think be quick and nimble and make decisions. Nothing will go as planned. There's a lot of external factor. You know, COVID was a good example. So you need to be able to be nimble and make quick decisions.
What motivates you?
I think when you produce a product like this, you know, it was different and people like it, you know, that gives you a sense of pride. And I think that's what drives me.
What do you like to splurge on?
Oh, how much time do we have?
That's great. What's a recent favorite movie, TV show, podcast, or book that you've recently
watched? Oh, it's a big question, but let's say the most recent TV series I've watched is The Great on Hulu.
Okay.
About Catherine the Great.
Okay.
Russia.
A little bit of history.
Yeah.
What's a Thai word or phrase that everyone should know?
Chon Gao. That's cheers.
Chon Gao.
Cheers.
I just met your colleague, Amar, the executive chairman of Standard International. Learned a whole ton from him, a lot of insights. Mm-hmm. I told him it was like 10 years in the making that I've been meaning to meet him. And I think, you know, offline we were talking about our own journeys into the hospitality business. Mine was a while back as a junior at an OTA. Yours was in a bigger, much bigger role, director of Standard.
Yeah, and pretty accidental, actually.
Pretty accidental. Yeah. So why don't we just start there? Mm-hmm. Quick intro from you. Yeah. And my question after would be, how did you end up from going from BCG, partner of a consulting firm, all the way to where you are today, running a hospitality business?
So I think, I started my career in consulting with BCG for a long time. And with BCG, you know, you change industry every few months. Mm. So I'm used to kind of just changing my head, wrapping my head around new industry all the time. So I was working with Sansiri as a client in 2017 when they were looking to acquire Standard. And they did in November 2017, they acquired majority control of the Standard brand globally. Mm. That's when I got poached. Into this role. And then, and then the first, you know, it was a big decision because, you know, I had to move halfway across the world to New York as well for this role initially. But it was like a full circle moment for me because I lived in New York once in 2012 for a year. Back then, I used to go to Labang and Boom Boom, which are two kind of famous venues at the Standard High Line back then, you know, trying to get in, you know, nightlife over there. So it was like kind of a full circle moment. So I accepted the role.
Amazing.
I spent the first kind of 3 years over there, just getting the company ready for kind of global growth. And then I moved back here during the pandemic in late 2020. Since then, I've been leading Asia expansion.
Okay, amazing. Mm-hmm. What a journey. All the way from customer all the way to director of the business now. You know, I was telling Amar just earlier too that 10 plus years ago when I started working in general, but also in hospitality, the Standard really was, in my eyes, one of the thought leaders and not just thought, but actually doing in terms of the lifestyle hospitality movement. I kind of want to hone in today of the topic of the podcast about Asia. Mm-hmm. That's how we technically met, actually. So our team received a press release from your team a few months ago. I opened one in every 10. Mm-hmm. I opened it up in this one because I'm really interested
in hospitality.
So glad you did. I did. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here too. Mm-hmm. And I remember the headline was something about Sansiri/Standard wanting to take this brand and bring throughout all of Asia. Singapore is coming, Melbourne is coming. And I was just thinking, like, wow, that's not what I remember knowing about the Standard Brown 10 years ago. I remember it being a brand in LA and New York, very US-centric. Now it's really bringing its roots global because I think the lifestyle trend is not just the US, right? It's Asia is one of those hubs now. So let's start with that.
Yeah, so that's exactly what Sensory saw, actually, when they went in. They saw this really powerful brand in the US. When we went in 2017, it was pretty much still a domestic brand. They had 5 property in the US, and that was it. No international presence at all. We think that's so underutilized. We think the brand has so much potential. So that's been the focus in the past kind of 5-6 years, just to really get it global. So we first opened our first international property in London right before COVID. And since then, we opened a few more throughout Asia and then throughout Europe as well. And we're going to reach a new continent a little later this year in Australia. So we feel like, you know, the brand is so strong. And I think that was the challenge for us. How do you bring the brand that has such big loyalty, big loyal following, and then bringing that halfway across the world, but still staying true and authentic to what the brand stands for? And, you know, it takes an army.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the strategy of Standard, particularly in Asia, because I have always seen, and to this date, that it's a very urban-centric brand, all about the culture, being a destination for the city, people come here to have a great time, for whatever reason it might be. You guys have recently opened other properties, though, like Kuihin, which is on the beach. It's an urban resort kind of concept. You have resort concepts as well. You have, I think offline we talked about doing a ski resort even. Why don't we talk about that a little bit? Is it, what are you seeking when you think about expansion in Asia? Is it just the big cities? What are we
I think, you know, while we're known for our kind of urban properties, I think we do other product like resort and, you know, even urban retreat product pretty well as well. And the way we do it is, you know, I think we have a few lifestyle pillars that we always think about, whether that's art, fashion, music, culinary, nightlife, design. And then we really customize each of these pillars to different cities and locale, because I think the clientele is different. The needs are different, the expectations are different. So example of when we come to Bangkok, you know, we know this is a cultural hub for the city. We know people have, you know, very worldly and global taste level. So when we think about F&B concept, when we think about what designer to pick, when we think about what kind of cuisine to bring in, we really kind of think what will really fit in here, right? What will really kind of stand out while still fitting with the locale. Kuihin is another good example. It's a completely different kind of product from Bangkok because it has to be a resort. But how do we do things differently? We bring different kind of F&B concept, we bring different kind of design, and really to really fit with the locale. We do not have to grow to establish cities first. Our strategy is to grow to establish cities and emerging cities at the same time, and also urban and resort at the same time. So example being, I think in Europe, we go to London and also Ibiza, you know, around the same time. Next, we're going to Lisbon, which might not be your, you know, obvious suspect when it comes to established cities in Europe, but we see so much potential in that city. Same here, you know, I think we opened in Hua Hin even before Bangkok, even before Singapore.
Got it.
We think if you stay true to the brand, you stay true to the product, I think people will get it.
Let's talk about the bespoke approach to the standardization, which is ironic in a way, because I've been to Standard in several places in the world, and for me, it's not even about the hard products, it's not about the materials, it's not about the TV or anything like that. It's actually about the values of the brand. So I would say in the kind of being fun, being an active place, being a town square. That's a new term that I've loved using recently. You guys are in a place like Asia, there are no town squares, right? There are shopping malls. But how do we move beyond that? What is the next town square? And in this case, potentially hotels.
And that's how we think about each of our property. I think there's certain kind of DNA threads that run across our property, whether that's how we think about design, whether that's how we think about food, whether that's how we think about use of space. I think a good example is, I think when you go across to most hotels in Asia, when you go to the spa, it's all about privacy and luxury, and, you know, everyone have their own private rooms and stuff. But we think of public space a little differently. We like public spaces to be communal space. In our spa in Miami and in the Maldives, for example, instead of going really hard on private rooms, we do a hammam, where, you know, you get mixed gender kind of mingling together, and they're very popular.
Okay.
So these are just some examples of how we think about our product. We don't like people to spend too much time in the room, actually. We want people to spend more time in the public spaces, whether those are spas or F&B outlets.
Let's talk about that in the Asian context, because I would say from, let's say, a Vietnamese point of view, and we'll talk about the Vietnam aspect in a little bit after we get into the meat of today's podcast. But correct me if I'm wrong, but Asian cultures, specifically Vietnamese, we think differently, though. Maybe, you know, there's the old conversation of millennials versus, like, you know, generation, whatever it might be, older generation, essentially. The older generation don't think about public spaces. Like, even think about the fact that as Asians, we like to take our shoes off when we go in private spaces. It's our oasis. It's our home. We want to spend time in there. And hotels kind of play that similar role in the sense, like, a traditional big box hotel, your public spaces are for the guests, not for the outside.
Yeah.
So what's your reply to that? Why do you think standard could work in a place like Asia? Is it because mentalities are shifting, younger generations demand something different?
I think for sure, I do agree. I think the Asians are a little bit more introverted when it comes to the, you know, how they interact compared to kind of the Western kind of market. But there's a shift there. There's a real demand for, you know, communal space. There's a real demand for congregating in public space a little bit more. And there's a real demand for experience rather than kind of the physical space itself. So definitely we see a shift. I think certain markets move, you know, faster than others, but for sure we think that's a place for it.
Let's touch upon, we talked a lot about consumers and just from a hospitality overview, what things are moving to. Let's talk about the owners. You work with one directly, owner of chairman of Sansiri, one of the bigger developers here in Thailand. Obviously a bit more progressive in the way that they're thinking. We're seeing the product of that. Most developers are not, though. Let's be honest about that. I think as you guys expand throughout Asia, I think you're at something like 20 in the pipeline already, but you want to have 50 by the end of this decade or whatever it is. How do you think about working with ownership? And what kind of ownership common themes are you guys seeking to work with in order to achieve that goal of 50 hotels?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we work with all kinds of owners, right? Even within Asia itself, the different kind of owners that we work with. I think even within the same country, you work with a fund or you work with a family, their expectations are, you know, different already. But I think for each owner, regardless of what they are, there are two kind of big broad things, and I'm generalizing here, that we need to deliver. At the end of the day, we're doing this, you know, we need to make money. We need to make profit. We need to make budget. So that we need to deliver. But on top of that, actually, one thing that we see owners are appreciating more is beyond the financial return, some people look for something that they can be proud of, especially in Asia, especially family owners. They look for something that can be a little bit of a trophy for them as well. And, you know, we like this because it adds a little bit more value and it makes them a little bit more confident to try something new, try something different. And, you know, I think that's a good example. You know, we found great owners within this building, the King Power Group. They have very good vision. They can kind of see what we want to create in this space. They can kind of see the value of being different.
How to build a town square.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think
not everyone's going to duty free all the time. So
yes.
I think that's a good way to put it, because let's take family businesses, for instance, where they've made their bread and butter through everything from manufacturing to real estate to agriculture. And those are not naturally town squares in a way. And as families globalize in this world, not just within their countries, but also in the world, and they seek all these different experiences, how to have those experiences come to them? So you mentioned having trophies. You build something special that stands for something that is cutting edge, innovative, or just better quality. And people will seek out those experiences.
As well. And I think, you know, we stay true to what we're about. You know, I think I touched on it a little earlier. We had our lifestyle pillars and we really stay true to them. And I think most hotel wants to become the center, but they focus on one angle rather than multiple, right? I think you will see, if you look across most boutique hotel, they focus on one thing, which is design, and it ends there, right? I think, like I mentioned, I think we go beyond that. We really think about how music affects, you know, your feeling in the atmosphere, how fashion, you know, affects everything. We work with, you know, emerging designer to do kind of funky uniform. And it goes to, like, culinary and art. And, you know, art, we're not just talking painting and sculpture. We're talking, like, you know, painting a pool deck or, you know, having, you know, interesting macrame, some artisanal work. So we really think about all of this so that people, once they come to our property, they appreciate and they see like the true product that we are.
Let's talk about the commercials, because a lot of these investors and owners, at the end of the day, want to see results. And I think you're no stranger to that, considering you work at Sanserio as well. But you know, in your past life, you were a consultant at BCG, where you're talking all day long about optimization, driving revenues, cutting costs.
Exactly.
You cut from that cloth, so you, you know how to talk that lingo. At the same time, you know how to empathize with the more cultural town square, you know, innovation from that angle. How do you bridge that to an owner? Let's say I'm an owner. Let's play a role play here. I'm an older. I'm a bit more stubborn. I want to make my ends meet, and I'm thinking.
I give you. I think I have a real example all the time because I do this all the time. I mean, things like. Let's say, why do I need to hire a DJ? Why do I need to put so much money into kind of the speakers and stuff? Just to, you know, why am I doing this? At the end of the day, it's making money, right? Example is, we have a restaurant here. If you finish a meal and it's quiet and the atmosphere is a little dead, people leave, right? But if it gets a little dark, the atmosphere is kind of fun, the music kind of picks up a little bit, people keep staying, people keep spending. So our flagship restaurant here at the rooftop, if you go there on like a Friday evening, at midnight, it's still pretty much almost full because people just keep, you know, drinking and spending. So, and that yield to real result. Yeah, and that cut across multiple things as well, but that's one example I can think of.
Phenomenal. Your home turf is Bangkok. You're looking at a lot of expansion, not just in Asia, globally as well. We have Melbourne and Sydney on the horizon. Where else after that, you think,
so
is top of mind?
Melbourne is next, and then Singapore will be early next year. We're very excited about that one. I think Singapore, you know, is very challenging to get into. I think the government, they don't release new hotel licenses that often. And the market, as you know, so developed and so filled with like traditional brand, I think is really ready for a truly differentiated product like ours. And then we want to grow everywhere. I think, you know, with our brand, with our range of product, whether the resort or urban, I think we can go to all the key cities across Asia, whether, you know, urban or resort.
Let's talk about the kind of customers too. You're going everywhere. Hopefully, let's see. You have 50 hotels, the dream pipeline, that milestone you want to reach in a few years' time. Who are the customers that are going to follow that? Are they going to be those Aman junkies? So do you know that term, by the way? So are those going to be the base customers? And what do you
to a certain extent, I think we definitely have loyal followings. We definitely kind of appeal a lot more to kind of the younger and artistic type of customer. However, we appeal quite a bit to you know, traditional kind of customer as well. If you look at our guest profile, yes, we're a little heavier on the younger and the more leisure and the more artistic kind of work discipline. But we do have quite a bit of your traditional, you know, banker as a consultant, like I was as well. Because I think at the end of the day, people look for different experiences now. When they go to different cities, you know, I think we had similar career before where we used to have to travel all the time. Now people want to experience things. And you know, they want to have fun with their travel a little bit. So even though we cater more towards the younger, you know, we do get quite a big, a wider range of clientele as well.
For our audience, a lot of our audiences are developers, keen hospitality, folks interested in the space. I mentioned to a few actually that I've been coming to Bangkok, I've been meeting the folks behind Standard, and they're like, oh, you know, we heard this, we heard that, you know. I want to take this opportunity, just a little tidbit to whatever you can share. How do you think about a place like Vietnam, which is next door to Thailand? It's a bigger population, a lot more young people.
I want to go there.
You want to go
there? I want to go there. We want not just one, we want multiple hotels in Vietnam. I think Vietnam is a great market. I think people are very worldly, and they get what we're all about. I think most kind of Vietnamese I know, they're much more worldly than other kind of more established cities, just because of the exposure that we have. So I think with a brand like Standard, I think Vietnam is one of the primary target, both for urban and resort.
Here's my follow-up question, though. Why haven't you been there yet? And I kind of, that's kind of a leading question for me to ask, but I want to hear from you, because I think a lot of the potential developers that I know are listening to today's show are thinking the same thing. They have all these brands, big boxed, boutique, whatever, coming in across all different types of industries that play in real estate. And they all say the same things. You know, they don't know enough people there, they don't know about the real estate future, maybe it's maybe it's the paperwork. What are the common themes in your limited experience when coming to Vietnam that have prohibited you thus far from entering?
I think there's a couple of things. I think one thing is really giving a good understanding what our product is. You know, we even had challenges here in Bangkok when we just started out, because as I mentioned earlier, we had really great brand awareness in the US and even in Europe, but not much in Asia. So convincing a hotel owner to invest quite a lot of money, you know, into a completely different, a new product, you know, it takes quite a bit, right? And, you know, even if we had a lot of successes in the US, and even if we have a lot of successes in London, you know, it doesn't quite translate. You don't really have the trust of the developer yet, right? So it took a little while to find the right partners here in Asia. You know, we have the Maldives, and we have Hua Hin, and we have Bangkok here. Now that we have, you know, a good test case, a good kind of showcase product, this is where we started going out properly, right? And it, you know, obviously it takes a little bit of time. And I think I discussed with you a little offline too, you know, the political situation, you know, kind of slowed things down a little bit towards the end of last year.
Okay. So if you're out there listening and think you can get around these challenges, let the Standard team know. Pong, we're in this beautiful hotel here. I think the tallest building in Bangkok. I just learned that today. Doesn't surprise me though, now that I look at the skyline. Tell us about the design inspirations of the space.
And
I understand this is not to be, you know, cookie cutter across the Standard products. So maybe start there and then talk about the design philosophies of Standard.
I think the design philosophy is that there's a couple of things. I think one is we like things a little bit retro. So you get a little bit of retro feel. Second is, you know, our logo is upside down for a reason. We want to turn hospitality upside down. We want to turn luxury design upside down. I mean, if you look across our hotel, you know, it's a different kind of luxury. You don't see use of marbles and gold, you know, as much. But we focus more on, you know, the design itself and clever use of material. And this is actually another one of our competitive advantages when we talk to different owners and developers when they want to do luxury hotel, because the cost to build is much cheaper.
Let's talk about that too. Let's get specific as you can. I walk into these five-star hotels and I, terrazzo, marble, that's kind of expensive, you know, that adds up. A lot of it's imported or whatever it might be. What is the cost per square meter of a no exact numbers, but it's a well-designed property. At face value, I'm thinking, oh, this was expensive.
I actually don't have the number at the top of my
head. If you were to just give ranges, though, I'm just asking.
I can give you like a number for Hua Hin, because that I know. I think Hua Hin, we built it for around, I think, not including the land and not including the soft cost, only about 4 million baht per key. You know, do the math. But I think it's a pretty good kind of, it's pretty good and pretty low
per
number.
Per key. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we have 199 key. So the cost, you know, the real hard cost was about 800 million baht, which is, do the math, a little over 20 something million, US, which is not much at all.
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah. And, you know, next time you come to Bangkok, I hope you have a chance to go to Hua Hin.
Yes.
You see, again, it's a different way of, you know, doing luxury. Right. Again, we don't use expensive material. We use, you know, we have clever use of design, and the material is just basic. That's how we're able to save costs while still creating the wow factor that we have been able to do.
Okay. And how does that compare to a five-star hotel product? Because, you know, Standard, I consider it on the higher end, but not quite luxury. But you still have elements of the luxury without being cheap.
Absolutely.
So, you know, are you a five-star hotel? Are you a one-star? You're definitely not a one-star hotel, but...
No, but I think nowadays, I think people stay away from that ranking anymore because it's a little bit misleading. And even within our portfolio, right, we have a range of product. I think, you know, some products, like some of our flagship product, like Standard Highline or London or Bangkok, is a little bit more elevated. But some of the more kind of normal kind of level standard, like the Standard Miami or Standard Hua Hin, is a little bit more laid back. So I would say it's probably, if you want to put that in the traditional kind of star category, is probably like entry level five star.
Okay, gotcha. I think for, again, playing the role of an owner, I'm considering, okay, I want to put a five star property that's that town square in whatever city I am in the world. Where the direction of kind of travelers are going, is it more of the, you know, premium business traveler that you're thinking of attracting? Is it that younger Gen Z, even millennial, mm-hmm. the one that's in the know of society. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys play within that space?
I think our space, when it comes to clients, is pretty wide. Mm. Because I think when it comes to age, I think, you know, we have anyone from the young ones up to the 40s and the 50s. I think we have quite a lot of that. Yeah. A little younger on average, of course, compared to others. And I think I mentioned earlier, even though we cater to more of the leisure and artistic type of clientele, we do appeal quite a bit as well, more than we expect, actually, to the traditional traveler. So even though, you know, we're assigned to this, everyone is welcome. Mm. Everyone will have a good time at the standard.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually told Amar the same story, and I want to hear your reaction as well. Mm-hmm. My brother, I just posted on Instagram a couple hours ago, here I am at the standard, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he's into that kind of, you know, the hospitality hotels too. And he's like, how, you know, I'm going to Bangkok in August. Mm-hmm. I'm deciding between the Park Hyatt and the standard. What do you think? I'm like thinking, that's an interesting question, because I normally wouldn't immediately pinpoint those two as like competition necessarily, but in a way they kind of do, because, you know, the locations are iconic. It's a bit nicer product, but at least on top of my head, I'm thinking, okay, Park Hyatt's like 50 plus.
We're almost as expensive as Park Hyatt.
Sure, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you'd be aware of that, you would know this, but for the viewer who's not aware, I think one key metric we use quite a bit in the hospitality sector is RevPAR, which is revenue per available room.
Yes,
and we do that, we have that index to like a competitive set of...
well, let's talk about that, because so your RevPAR is more or less around the same as some five-star luxury products in Bangkok for this particular product. Mm-hmm. What's driving that? Is it the food and beverage offerings that you guys have that's driving that? Mm-hmm. You know, you're maximizing the revenue per guest in a way.
I think it's definitely a combination of different things, right? I think location, the product itself, the design, right? And I think people pay premium for the vibe. Mm. And, you know, that is, you know, in certain location, it can command more premium than others, especially like New York. You know, kind of the vibe and how busy it is, the kind of, you know, the crowd that you want to be around, especially in New York, you can command really high premium, not to mention Miami, actually. Mm. Miami, our physical property is actually not thing special, but with the right vibe, the right crowd, people pay crazy premium for those. Mm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it differs a little bit property by property, but people do pay for that.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Thank you for all your insights about the standard, Pong. I just have two follow-up questions here before we wrap today's podcast. Mm-hmm. And the second to last one will be about Sansiri. So you have a second job, which is on the board of Sansiri, is that right?
I'm president of Sansiri US, which oversees international investment.
There you go. So you're the president of Sansiri US, overseeing investments. Mm-hmm. What is Sansiri's vision when it comes to investing in something like the standard and letting that run? And maybe you can touch upon that.
Yeah, so at Sansiri, we were predominantly like real estate, residential real estate developer. Mm. We do both high rises and you know, single houses. But our chairman, our leader, our management have a pretty good vision. You know, we want the brand to be comparable to, you know, global brands. We want the brand to have the right kind of, you know, global vision. So we invest in these different companies to extract certain benefits from different ones, right? Mm. We invested in a property management company. We invested in a media company. Mm. We invested in the standard, of course, because there are adjacent benefits that we can extract from each.
Example. You can learn from all of them.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yeah. So I think standard is a good example. I think standard is leading the way in terms of design. So we bring a lot of inspiration from standard to Sansiri as well. Mm-hmm. Same with, you know, media. You know, we look at how we think about how we speak to customer. And we bring that to how we messages think at Sansiri. So anything that has, you know, adjacent benefit to our core business is how we think about investing.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the more innovative thinkings for especially a real estate developer. Mm-hmm. Yep. Pong, you know a lot about a lot of businesses from your time at BCG, but more specifically last few years about real estate, about hospitality. The question I always like to ask my guests at the very end is, what do you want to know more about that you don't know about? And that's because today's podcast, we've done a couple hundred now. Mm-hmm. We have guests from all across different industries. Mm-hmm. And while they're experts in something, they're not experts in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I think there's areas such as AI, for instance, that people really want to know more about, but they just don't know. What is that one area or even two that you would like to know more about that you just don't know?
I think I touched on this briefly in our prior conversation, but it's about generating the right content that really can grab people's and, you know, readers' attention, right? The reason why is I think if we go back a couple, you know, not a couple of years, like 5-10 years, the Standard is a very content-led brand. That's how we were able to get such high brand loyalty in the West, in the US. If you went to our website, I think 5-10 years ago, it looks like a magazine website, but then a hotel website, right? But what we learn while we grow internationally is, you know, certain type of content may appeal to one geography, but not to others, right? So now as we're getting the right scale and the right kind of brand awareness, we think about content creation again. So, you know, that's one thing, you know, top of my mind in terms of what kind of content I create that could really grab people at the right cost and get people the brand loyalty.
Tell everybody that every company is a media company these days. I think especially for a brand like Standard, you guys are everywhere. And you need to be communicating or someone else will do it for you. So, well, very good. Thank you so much, Pong, for your sharing today and your insights and amazing learnings. And, you know, if you're a developer in hospitality, you want to work with or for or on the Standard product, you can talk to Pong and his team. They're based here in Bangkok, but they're also all around Asia and the world. Pong, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I know you're a very busy man. And having you and, of course, Amar on the other episode, check out that episode as well. There'll be a link in the comments. A lot of learnings just in a short bit of time. So I wish we had more time.
Thank you. Welcome back to Any Standard Anytime. And you'll see a lot more of us over the next few years.
Yes.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. We'll see you guys next time on another episode of Vietnam Innovators. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.